welcome to Indiana Weekend with John Strauss. This is a kind of radio magazine show about the interesting places and intriguing people in our part of the state. We're always interested in your thoughts. Drop us a note to indianaweekend@gmail.com with your suggestions and comments. Let us know what's going on where you are. Talking to you from downtown Muncie today. It's been quite a year for the city. The Star Press has reported that FBI agents are looking into local government. As the newspaper reported in May, the elements of the investigation, generally known, they say, include building demolitions conducted by the city, sometimes involving a private company founded by the city building commissioner. For the details, just Google up Muncie FBI investigation and Star Press. Much of the work on this story has been done by two longtime City Desk reporters, Doug Walker and Keith Roysden, and they have a new book out called Wicked Muncie. Walker and Roysden joined us in the studio. Keith Roysden says the book's timing is interesting because it's not about the latest probe, but about stories going back into Muncie history.
Well, the funny part is it's timely and completely removed from time at the same time. And we kind of set about trying to do something that was much more historical and much less current.
I mean, your story from back in May talks about FBI no stranger to Muncie. And it's a long list of things that have happened that in the early 1990s, federal investigators were looking into the troubled history of the Delaware County Justice Center. There's been a lot that's happened over the years.
Certainly, Muncie has had a lot of political controversy and investigations of this nature pretty much throughout its history. Whether it's actually part of the DNA, I don't know. A number of years ago, I did a story focused on that to some degree, and Ray Sheely of the political science department here at Ball State indicated that most Midwestern cities believe that they have a history of corruption and scandal and consider themselves Little Chicago. So apparently that's a fairly widespread feeling.
I know people in Terre Haute would tell you that, South Bend. Tell me about Wicked Muncie. Did there come a time where you're sitting around in a coffee shop and said, hey?
We have talked for a long time about doing a book project. A year ago, we did a special section for the Star Press, and the book is not a Star Press project. It is separate. But we did a special section for the Star Press, and my contribution to that in part was a kind of a history of crime in Delaware County. And a publisher who specializes in local history books that appear throughout the country contacted me, and they apparently thought we had enough material to consider a book here, and that's really where it came from.
It's a research project as much as a writing project, right? You have an idea, gee, there's a lot that's happened.
Right.
You're going back through the clips, your...
Clips. Spent a lot of time here in the microfilm. Actually, a lot of cases that predated the surviving clips in our library. And they wanted the emphasis to be more on the past, not on people who are still part of the current scene. So we have 19 chapters that tell a story about a crime or interesting characters or scenarios. And I think the oldest story begins in 1898, and we kind of go from there.
And I have to ask, what happened in 1898?
In 1898, a five-year-old, it's a sad story, a five-year-old boy was shot in what is now McCullough Park. And that resulted in the trial of a 12-year-old as an adult for murder. And the trial unfolded very oddly and ended up really raising more questions than it answered. Ultimately, the little boy's murder was never solved.
Is it fair to say, I have this impression, right, when you read about the old times and various cities, that maybe there was a period earlier where officials turned a blind eye to vice and corruption?
The first chapter of the book actually is about a case that involved a cigar store in downtown Muncie, close to where the Walnut Street traffic circle now exists.
And people may not know at all, the cigar stores at the time were very much kind of a front for other activities in the rear, in particular, gambling.
And at any rate, one night in 1949, two men from southern Indiana went in. there was never really a consensus on what exactly happened. Some people said they came in to rob the place. Others said that they were doing well gambling, and the local people there got angry. But at any rate, gunfire broke out, 3 people killed, 4 wounded, and that just kind of left the city's reputation in tatters. The local ministers contacted the governor and pretty much asked him to impose martial law and bring state police in because they said local authorities wouldn't handle vice. There was a trial for these 2 men from southern Indiana. It was a bizarre circus-type spectacle, reading it, whatever, 60 or 70 years after the fact. And the defense attorney said their goal was to put Muncy on trial, and they did that. Everything seemed to come out. There was certainly indication of widespread gambling and vice in the community. Ultimately, only one man was convicted. That conviction was later overturned, and he pled guilty then to a far lesser charge because authorities, after that trial, which was covered extensively throughout the state and I think to a large degree set the stage for Muncy's reputation for the ensuing few decades, local authorities were not interested in having this trial again. So 3 men dead, 1 man ended up spending 5 years in prison.
And when was that?
That was in 1949, the trial following year.
The book is Wicked Muncy by Doug Walker and Keith Royston. Here's how it's described at Amazon. Muncy is the classic small American city, but for much of the past 2 centuries, the city fell victim to murder, corruption, and the bizarre. Mayor Rollin Bunch went to prison for mail fraud, while his police commissioner faced a murder rap. Viola Babe Schwartz ran a brothel out of a truck stop that was raided by police at least a dozen times, but ran for sheriff in the 1974 primary election. June Holland of the locally famous Holland Triplets killed her neighbor for refusing to sell her house. Authors Keith Royston and Doug Walker explore the notorious and unusual side of Muncy's history. That's the Amazon description of your book. Muncy had quite a reputation.
You know, it really did. When Doug was talking about that cigar store incident from 1949, it was interesting as we were doing research for this book that I was finding references in the murder trials and other trials in the 1960s. And in one instance, Deputy Prosecutor A.J. Hall said, until a few years ago, Muncy had a reputation as a city where you could kill someone and get away with it. So a lot of times it's tempting to think, oh, you know, people kind of assign this reputation to a community and they want to think the worst of it. But frankly, there's such a long history of grim incidents, odd incidents, sometimes humorous incidents, all of which we try to at least touch on in some aspect in Wicked Muncy.
Keith Royston with Doug Walker, reporters at the Star Press in Muncy, and authors of the new book, Wicked Muncy, Tales Taken from the City's Lurid Past. The book comes out October 17th and is available for pre-order at Amazon. You can get more information from the book's Facebook page. The writers say that stories for a few chapters in the book were in the back of their minds for years. More than a decade ago, Royston came across a newspaper clipping about the June 1956 funeral in Muncy of Miller Thompson, the king of a tribe of traveling tradesmen sometimes referred to as gypsies. The chapter, The Funeral of the Gypsy King, covers not only that funeral, but the history of gypsies in Muncy.
Indiana Weekend, interesting people and places from across our region. Look for that name on Facebook and drop us a line. Let us know what you think at indianaweekend@gmail.com.
Sometimes when you do a project like this, there's the historical record, there are the clips, and then there are people who still remember, who were there when it happened. Any chance to catch up with those folks?
You know, it was interesting. We didn't do a lot of contemporary interviews. I spoke to former Judge Robert Barnett Jr., who was a central player to a couple of chapters, one in which he was a deputy prosecutor, not the one I mentioned earlier, and one in which he was a judge. And Judge Burnett's time on the bench was long enough that he had memory of trials and cases going back to the 1960s. So at some point, we spoke to him because we wanted to confirm a few details from some old newspaper coverage. But the interesting part was a lot of this really focused on the contemporary coverage, whether it was local newspapers or newspapers from elsewhere in the area, because we realized during this research process that these were stories that had not been told in some cases in 50, 60, 70, 80 years. There are people who still kind of, I think, have a kind of a shadowy idea of what some of them are. We occasionally would see people post on Facebook sites, "Oh, I remember such and such incident from the 1960s, but they remembered it in a very skewed way. So one of the things that we liked doing in the book was telling people something they didn't have really any hard facts about for, in some cases, half a century or more.
You get to set the record straight.
Right, right. Keith's stories tended to be more recent than mine, while not terribly recent. For the most part, I couldn't interview participants because they're long gone.
I think my latest chapter ends, and that's the one about the triplets, that ends about 1981. So that's pretty much the most recent thing that some of the people were alive until the present or recent past. But as far as the cases we wrote about and the incidents that we wrote about, they pretty much wind down around 1981.
You have mentioned that some of the FBI's earliest interactions in Muncie were in 1933 and 34 when the feds were looking for John Dillinger.
Right.
Isn't it funny how many Indiana communities have a Dillinger story?
They do. One thing we note here, and certainly Dillinger committed a couple of robberies in Delaware County. Actually, a decade earlier, kind of the John Dillinger of the early 20s, a man named Gerald Chapman, was arrested here after a year or more as the most wanted fugitive in the country. He had been involved in a large postal robbery in New York City and hid out for an extended period in the Eaton area. And he was captured in downtown Muncie and then blamed his landlord for alerting authorities, and his landlord and his wife were then ambushed and shot to death near Daleville a few months later. One thing we've noted, and this is noted in the book, many aspects of the Chapman story have passed on, and as they're retold now, particularly in the Eaton area, people say that his actions, where he was, what took place, was Dillinger. His deeds have been remembered, but people are saying it was John Dillinger did them.
A good reason to write a book every now and then to kind of clear it all up. There was even a little bit of a tie to the Kennedy assassination at one point, right?
Right. There was a former Muncie resident who testified before the Warren Commission, and this is not in the book, by the way. He testified before the Warren Commission that Jack Ruby, who killed the president's accused assassin, Lee Harvey Oswald, that he, in the 1940s, had attended communist meetings in downtown Muncie. And because of Oswald's political leanings, that would have been significant if, in fact, that was true. The Warren Commission ultimately rejected that.
Doug Walker, author with Keith Roysden of the new book Wicked Muncie, featuring strange stories from the city's past. Roysden is the government watchdog reporter at the Muncie Star Press. He and Walker won the Kent Cooper Award for Story of the Year in Indiana for their 2010 Cold Case story on Muncie's most notorious unsolved murders. Their book comes out October 17th and is available for pre-order at Amazon.
This is Indiana Weekend with John Strauss on Indiana Public Radio.
I'm Keith Roysden, co-author with Douglas Walker of the new book Wicked Muncie. In doing the research and the writing for this book, we found a lot of stories that would be maybe to some extent familiar to people, but really one of my, I kind of have a taste for the obscure and darkly ironic, I think. And one of the stories that that I most enjoyed being able to retell in this book was a story from the early 1950s in which a Muncie man, Jess O'Geese, was, and it's interesting, his name is was Jess O'Geese. He was ostensibly caught stealing chickens at a farm just over the county line in Randolph County. And the farmer shot Mr. O'Geese dead in the middle of the night when he caught him outside his chicken coop. I think authorities were inclined to believe the farmer, but it was interesting to note that a matter of hours passed before authorities decided that they would not pursue criminal charges against this farmer. One of the things that was pretty common at the time was if there was a slaying, the prosecutors would have a grand jury meet, and that's a small group of citizens who meet in private, and grand juries very commonly at the time made decisions in the court system about whether murder charges would be filed. Well, that did not happen in any way, shape, or form in this. Literally within hours, in time for the next day's newspaper, the decision had been made that no charges would be filed. Well, after coming across that story, it was interesting to do further research and find from 30 years earlier an instance where Mr. O'Geese made the headlines because he had won hundreds and hundreds of dollars, and we're talking about the 1920s, so this is a lot of money. He won hundreds of dollars gambling, and the local newspaper thought that was quite hilarious because as much of a frustration as that was to the people that, ran the gambling houses to lose money, they had just recently gotten an all-clear, proceed-as-normal type verdict from police and prosecutors that said, oh, no, it's perfectly legal what they do here. It's not gambling. You don't have to worry about that. So it left them totally without any kind of recourse. And who would have known that 30 years later, this same man would pop up in the headlines again for a much grimmer story?
One thing you touch on in your book is the way that society operated in so many ways, including taverns, which in the past, I don't know if we would say it was sort of a Wild West show, but there was a different approach to how morals, enforcement, and rules and regulations affecting the places where people hung out, right?
Well, it was interesting because we found a lot of newspaper clippings about how taverns, and we're talking about at the time, really a concentration of them in the downtown area and greater downtown area, but how taverns were given the occasional clean up your act warning from the police. They would encourage people to close at the time they were supposed to close and not have illegal activities. And it was interesting to find, because this is within my lifetime, but I had no idea about this. Not until 1969 did state law change in Indiana to allow women to sit at the bar in a tavern or a bar, and they always had to sit at a table. And one of the things that we were seeing in the 1960s was that these taverns could be a pretty doggone rough place to be. I mean, there were fights, and it was not uncommon for somebody to brutally murder someone else. You know, we could talk about this all day, really, but in some ways you could almost have a subtitle for the book of Life is Cheap, because in one instance that people, interestingly enough, I still see posts about this on the Lost Muncie page on Facebook. There was an incident in which a man went into a South Walnut Street tavern, this is in the 1960s, went into a South Walnut Street tavern and found his wife sitting at a table with another man. And he slashed his wife's throat repeatedly. And the way people retell it now is that he completely decapitated her and threw her head out the door of the bar and into the middle of Walnut Street. And that's how police realized this was the case. Well, obviously, looking at the actual historical record, we found what the real circumstance was. But Nevertheless, a pretty fascinating story, even if it wasn't quite that gruesome. I mean, it was, you know, she wasn't decapitated, but it was pretty doggone close. The police didn't need a head thrown in the middle of the street to get them to show up, by the way, because there was a police officer in the bar that night. The husband decided he was just going to go ahead and kill his wife regardless of that.
There have been some lurid stories over the years, for sure, and I think you folks write about the ghoul of the gravel pit.
Well, this was a strange story, because this is this occurred in a place that is very familiar to people now, and I'm assuming that most people have no idea this happened, and most people have no memory of it. Again, in the 1950s, a farm couple who lived just over the Delaware County line in Hartford City, disappeared one night, and they left behind toddler children really at home, and the woman's brother showed up and said, "There's nobody here." I assume they, you know, stayed out all night and left their kids here, because they're sometimes inclined to do that. And when authorities started investigating, they said, "You know, we may charge this couple with child neglect if they just decided to go into the big city of Hartford City or whatever, you know, and just stay out all night." So before too long, a passersby in northern Delaware County told police, "Well, I saw someone that night. I picked up a hitchhiker. He was coming back from just north of Muncie." Police applied a lot of pressure to a suspect and determined that the couple had been killed, their bodies put in the back of a car that had been widely searched for over a period of days by the state police, and rolled into a gravel pit north of Muncie. And during the suspect's trial, the prosecutors called him the ghoul of the gravel pit, because that's a fairly harsh thing to do to somebody. And in this instance, he chose to try to dispose of their bodies in what is now the Water Bowl, just north of Muncie. Because it's murder.
Keith Roysden, author with Doug Walker of the new book Wicked Muncie, featuring amazing stories from the city's past. Roysden is government watchdog reporter for the Star Press. Walker covers criminal justice. They also produce the weekly Walker Roysden Report, with items from the police and government beats. Their reporting this spring shed light on an FBI investigation into local government. There's nothing about that in Wicked Muncie, which deals with stories from decades ago. Maybe the current intrigue will make it into a future chapter. And that's our show for today. I'm John Strauss. Big thanks to our producer, Sean Ashcraft. Glad you could join us today. Thanks, and have a great week until we meet again on the next Indiana Weekend on Indiana Public Radio.
Indiana Weekend with host John Strauss. Our show is engineered at Indiana Public Radio, produced by Sean Ashcraft. Major support for Indiana Weekend comes from IPR's listeners. We hope you'll join your friends who are IPR members. You can go to indianapublicradio.org or give us a call at 1-800-646-1812. Join us again next week for Indiana Weekend with John Strauss here on Indiana Public Radio.